Hello, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station at Libertarian Voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you on Sunday evening, April 22nd. It's about 8:01 p.m. Central Time in the United States. Liberty Talk Radio is your antidote to popular talk radio. We hear you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, or Stalingrad. It's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good evening, everyone. During our live broadcast, we invite you to call 646-652-4620. And you will take your questions on the air. Otherwise, when we're off the air, call 903-551-2186 and you can leave a voice message. And of course, you can always send us email at comments@libertytalkradio.com. We'll try to respond to your questions during our next broadcast. In addition to accessing Liberty Talk Radio from our website, you may now access it, our broadcast from blogtalkradio.com/Liberty Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. This evening, we're going to have call in Linda Gray Murphy. She's with the Working Families Project. She'll be talking about women's rights. And so far, she hasn't called in, and I'm getting very concerned. I hope she will be here. I'm waiting for the phones to light up, and they haven't. But while we are waiting for her, let me give you an idea of what the Working Family Project is, so we can get a little head start and maybe give a little introduction to her. It's a grassroots organization that was formed out of the minimum wage campaign. We came together to bring about change in Oklahoma. Working families have gone too long without a voice. The goal of the Working Families Project is more forcefully inject the issues of working class, middle class, and poor people, like jobs, health care, education, diversity, clean campaigns, repealing right to work and housing into the public debate, and hold candidates and elected officials accountable on these issues. Our organizing strategy is to start local, think long-term, and combine campaign work with organizing and education, and not waste supporters' votes on candidates who do not represent the needs of Oklahoma working families. Now, very unlike for a libertarian program to have someone with the ideas that maybe the government should start taking control even more of our lives than it has now. So this should be interesting. So far, she hasn't called in. Let's see. Do I have a phone ringing? No, I still don't have a phone ringing. And folks, please call in 646-652-4620 and call at any time, even before our guest arrives. I'm getting very concerned. She's still not here yet. Where they spend, I guess the focus is increasing the minimum wage, which I'd love to ask her about if we have time. And she talks about a living wage. I'm not certain what we mean by that. Affordable housing, and I wonder who's in charge of the only countries that have what would be classified as affordable housing are the communist countries where the government really supplies the housing and people live in abject misery. But and then accessible health care. Well, we have that now. Good government. We're not going to have good government with more government, unfortunately. And clean campaigns never happen. Never happen. And a better economy for Oklahoma, I'm for that. Linda, where are you? We've been on the air now for 4 minutes, and it looks like Linda will not be... Linda, is that you? No, I do not hear the phones ringing. I still do not hear the phones ringing. Okay, well, I'll answer an email from last week. We talked about the Sunday before last. We talked about the Trans-Texas Corridor, or the NAFTA Superhighway. And we received a few emails on that, one of which, it says, how will this highway project affect our sovereignty? There was a three-part question. Will this eventually result in the merger of the United States, Canada, and Mexico? And how does the CFR figure into this? Well, the CFR is the Council of on Foreign Affairs, I assume, right? Well, to the answer to all three questions, who the heck knows? I mean, if we really knew, if anyone, I mean, there are people who know the answer to that question, and the people who do know the answer to that question would never go on any radio and admit it, first of all. Secondly, you have to at least be suspicious. Let me take suspicious out. We have to be on guard that this never occurs. What bothers me is that if Mexico and Canada decided to adopt our Constitution and convert their government to a pure U.S. constitutional form of government, quite frankly, I don't care if we merge with them. But that will never happen. Because with our Constitution, the primary cornerstone to our Constitution is a rule of law. And if Mexico is lacking something, and that is an absolute rule of law. In other words, there would have to be an incredible revolution in Mexico, one in which the entire infrastructure, political infrastructure, was eliminated, rebuilt from scratch, sort of like our founding fathers did. They would have to change absolutely mores, customs, absolutely everything. Now, so I say that we shouldn't merge, you know, with Mexico, because Mexico is not even a third world country. If Mexico continues to go the way it is going, it's going to be on par with sub-Sahara Africa. It is that poor. Now, it is incredibly rich in natural resources and has done absolutely nothing because of its lack of rule of law, lack of economic opportunity, and an elite class that's dictatorial and autocratic. Do we want to take that country in? Well, unfortunately, our country is turning that way. Now, once we get on parity with Mexico, using that as a baseline, there would be no problem if we, 20 years or 50 years from now, if we merged with Mexico, because it wouldn't make any difference. I mean, our Constitution would be out the window, you know. We would all be asking the government permission to do everything and anything. We would have virtually no freedoms. The only freedoms would be parceled out to the elite who make the laws, just like in Mexico. Then, let me tell you something. We can merge with Brazil. With Brazil, it would make no difference. You see my point? So my point says, we should not be concerned with us merging with Mexico. That would never happen, provided that we support our Constitution. Now, if we sit around and do nothing, and we lose all our rights, and we become, in fact, a northern Mexico, then it's not going to make any difference. I want people to start thinking about that. It's not going to make any difference at all. If we merge with another country, we can merge with Red China. It would affect that in itself would probably be an advantage. I mean, we'd probably learn something, because right now, economically, they're going down the right direction and we're going in the wrong direction. Maybe they can help turn us around a little bit. Okay. Now, I keep on saying, okay. I never say that when I give speeches, only on the radio. Will someone write to me and say, stop saying, okay. I hate that. Okay, you know, our guest still has not called in. I suspect she is not calling in. And I'll tell you what happened. I called her to tell her that she was going to be on the air at 8 o'clock rather than 8:30. I spoke with her on the phone, and she said, send me email with a telephone number. I sent an email, and it bounced back. And I had the correct email. Don't know why it bounced back. So then I gave her a call. I paged her, gave her all the information over her telephone, but I left the email, a voicemail. And, excuse me. And I haven't received the response. We shall persevere. We'll continue. He talks about affecting our sovereignty. We don't have to worry about NAFTA regarding our sovereignty. We don't have to worry about that. We are doing a great job of destroying our Constitution, of reducing the rights of the individual, and giving the government all the power they want to do whatever they please. We don't have to wait for this stupid highway. We've done a great job without it. With the highway or not, we have done a great job of decimating our freedoms, our rights, our liberties, you name it, we've done a good job. So let's not look at the highway and say, well, if we have this highway, you know, we're going to be in trouble and we're going to be lose our sovereignty. We've already done that. We've sold ourselves to empireship. We have troops all over the world. I understand we have troops now in 173 out of 193 nations. Is that not on? I mean, that's got to be a world's record. I mean, no empire probably has ever had that many troops in that many nations before. Never before. And then we have air bases. I mean, actual air bases with airplanes, airstrips, the whole nine yards in about 60 of about one-third of the nations around the world. You know? So when we talk about sovereignty, we blew it, guys. You know, everyone hates us because we're trying to control the rest of the world so that we can keep all these dictators in office, so that in power, so they can do as we say. And when they don't, then we knock them off like we did Saddam Hussein. Very simple, you know, and we do it. We don't do it because we're nice or we want to control the world. We do it because we control the flow of money, flow of oil, and that's the power. Very simple. All right. And he says, how does the Council on Foreign Affairs figures into that? Well, they're part and parcel of the whole game. I mean, you can't have that. Uh-oh, I just heard somebody. Oh, nope, I thought we were getting a phone call in. We can't have this without at least institutions in place that keep this the shadow governments of all of the world together in one place. You've got to have a fraternity. And the Council on Foreign Relations is, in fact, that fraternity. And is probably the most detrimental organization for the world. And when I say the world, I mean the people. The you and the me. And that's a shame. But let's not rest our laurels on trying to solve that problem. Because we got many more problems. And we're not solving them. We're letting them go. You know, we've got to get out of our system the fact that we want to be a free nation with the government controlling everything. Last week I railed a bit about Bob Bowman's tour. I think he's wonderful. I think he's doing a great job and he's doing a real service to America. But a few things he says really disturbed me. He talks about freedom and rights and liberty, and then he talks about universal health care. Well, you can't say freedom, rights, liberty, and then we want the government to take over, you know, our entire healthcare system. Now, admittedly, they would say the government wouldn't be taking over. It would be a one-payer system. And who's a one-payer system? The government. The government's going to be involved. There's going to be rules and regulations. There's going to be buildings built just to house the volumes of books on all the regulations. And healthcare will go to hell in a handbasket. You know it, and I know it. So you can't have both things. This woman that I was going to have on, Linda Gray Murphy, I was really excited about having her on because I had so many questions for her. And she's really for, you know, the working people. Well, what am I? I'm a business owner. I work almost, you know, I work 20 hours a day sometimes 7 days a week. Am I not a working person? Just because I own the business, I'm not a working person? Have any of my employees ever worked harder than I? No. I can tell you that they haven't. I mean, if they worked as hard as I did, I'd be in jail. But I worked that hard, made a company survive, and the result was that I was able to create jobs. I created jobs. But see, I'm not included in her, you know, in her concerns. See, I'm not a concern of hers. Me, you know, I broke my neck. I sweated blood. I lost money that you would not believe. I had to make it all back again. I sacrificed everything that I had to keep things going. And then when I finally make it, I was lucky. I finally made it. Some people don't. I finally make it where I'm making at least a livable wage now with my own company. At least I'm able to, you know, live comfortably. Now I'm not a nice guy anymore. Now I got to be concerned about, you know, minimum wage, livable, affordable housing. Well, that means that all the money that I earned, everything that I earned through all my blood, sweat, and tears, and as a result, able to hire people, provide them with good paying jobs and good opportunity. I provided that. Me. But now I'm the bad guy for doing that. Because now those people who don't want to work, who can't work, who haven't put in the effort, I have to pay my money, they want to take money away from me to build affordable housing, to provide universal health care, to provide a higher minimum wage than they're entitled to, than the marketplace, put it this way, than the marketplace will bear. So I have to sacrifice again for those people. I've already done that. Why do I have to do that twice and three times and four times over? I don't understand this minimum wage. We've had several programs on the minimum wage. We had a three-part series on it. The minimum wage is not the question. It's, do you want the government controlling wages? That's the question. Well, she wants a free and equitable society. How can you have a free and equitable society when the government is regulating wages? Now, I'll tell you one thing. If she went into business for herself, all of a sudden you'd say, oh, well, this person, you know, all they're going to do is this, this, and that, and, you know, I can only afford to pay him so-and-so, and that person can't work for her, even if they wanted to work for her for $4 an hour. Where's our freedom then? Where's the freedom for the person who wants to work for $4 an hour, just to have something? But no, she's relegated to $5, $6, or $7 an hour. And what constitutes a livable wage? It's not $5 an hour, I can tell you that. It's not six, it's not seven. You know that. Now, if you're single, you have a small apartment, live with a couple of friends, and you make $5 an hour, you're fine. You know, that's great. You can survive, you have no problem. But if you have children, and you need health care, and you need a little bit more than a one-bedroom apartment, no, $5 an hour is not going to do it. So what do we do now? Do we pay people according to their needs? If we paid everyone according to their needs, this entire country would implode. The entire economic system would collapse. It would collapse in less than 30 days. It's economic suicide. It's been proven time and time again. In other words, no matter what I do, someone else gets paid more because they're more needy than I, although they don't do anything. And that's exactly what she's advocating. Now, I know we say, oh, look at these poor people who work so hard. And yeah, there are poor people, and they all do work hard. A lot of people work hard. That's life. And a lot of these people had the opportunity to do other things, and they made a choice. When they went to school, they decided to do things other than study and get good grades. They decided not to go to, and I'm not talking about college, maybe welding school, maybe technology center, maybe secretary school, or whatever. Something where they can get a job that doesn't pay minimum wage, where the starting wage is $11 an hour. Well, as soon as someone takes control over their own life and becomes responsible and looks forward and said, hey, I'm not going to blow my life away. I'm not going to crap it up. I'm going to do the right thing. And they do something for themselves. All of a sudden, minimum wage is not an issue. When parents have kids and they go to schools that are horrible, and they're all horrible, and most of them are horrible, and they come home from school and they don't encourage them to read, they don't encourage them to use their mind, and they come home, their parents are watching television, doing nothing, and they do the same thing, and all they do is holler at them and beat them up. You see, the parents are just not doing anything. They're watching TV, playing golf, you know, going on vacation. Man, why should I sit in the corner and read? You mean I have to reward these people? I don't want to reward anyone. I have a tough enough time rewarding the employees that I have that are darn good. And it's tough. Working capital tough, believe me. In many years, my employees made a lot more than I did. The money just wasn't there. Government didn't come by and say, well, you know, we had to provide Joe with a livable wage. Why not? Oh, because, you know, I own the business. And I'm the bad guy. And as far as health care is concerned, folks, you know as well as I do, if our government gets a hold of health care, it's doomed. If you need a pacemaker, you are going to die before you get it. You know it, and I know it. And she's looking here for good, clean campaigns. We want good, clean campaigns. Let's kill the bureaucracy. Let's not have more bureaucracy. Another thing I want to talk about, enough about the Council on Foreign Relations and that. The answer is yes, 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 you know, but that's not our problem. Another one I received that said they wanted me to look at truck out rally with Frosty Wildridge. I can't pronounce his name. I think there's a type error in there. And www.saveamericafund.com. And he's encouraging everyone to go there if they're interested in the NAFTA superhighway. I mentioned that because we received email on that. Also, I want to encourage everyone to go to one of my favorite websites. It's mytwocentsonline.com. And my 2 cents, the two is a numerical two. mytwocentsonline.com. My friend Andy there has a website, and it's interesting, with a good libertarian voice, a lot of information, and it'll make you think. Please, and he also has a blog, but I was unable to find his blog today, so maybe I'm going in the wrong place. I will not give out erroneous information. Do go to his website, though, and you'll find it very, very interesting. Another thing, we have a few more minutes. I was going to make this a half-hour program now. What I'm going to do is make it a half-hour program and then wait a couple of minutes and see if Linda Gray Murphy calls in error at 8:30. So we're killing a half hour before she calls in, which may not be a bad idea anyway. I want to also, please call in at 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620, and we'll take your comments over the air. If you are not listening live, you'll have to call 903-551-2186 and leave a voicemail. Of course, you can always send this email, comments@libertytalkradio.com. Our instant message. Oop, we got two instant messages here. But where are they? We got two instant messages. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know how to do this thing. Okay, well, apparently we have two instant messages coming in, and they are not showing up. We're having problems somewhere. We got to speak to our technicians on all this good stuff. I read an interesting article. It was from the Gun Owners of America regarding background checks. Everyone's screaming for more gun control, background checks, you name it, they want it. And that's supposed to solve our problems because of the shootings in the Virginia Tech. Folks, I find this so incredibly frustrating. I'm surprised I'm not using four-letter words on the air because I really get that disgusted. But people who knew this nut had ample opportunity to get this guy out of the classroom. You know, everyone followed the rules and regulations so no one's at fault, right? Now, remember, everyone followed the rules and regulations, and everyone's clean. Unfortunately, 33 people have died dead. And that's because they follow the rules and regulations. And we want the government to get involved so we have more rules and regulations that everyone can follow. And when we follow all the rules and regulations, then we absolve ourselves of responsibility. No one's responsible for anything anymore. Well, this guy was a menace. Everyone who knew him said he was a menace. He was a real problem, you know. And no one did or said, I mean, what was done is they went for counseling. They realized when he went to counseling, my question is, went to counseling. Didn't you realize this guy was a nutcake? Why did you put him back in the classroom? But no, they just persisted and let it go and let it go and let it go. Well, I have real problems with this whole thing. And because no one wanted to be responsible, now they're picking on gun control. Now the subject is gun control, and that would have precluded this from happening. Well, quite frankly, there's a possibility if he couldn't go and get a gun at all, he may not have done that. There's always that possibility. Unlikely, he would have found a way to get a gun. Guns are easy to get. There are more guns in this world than there are people, so don't worry about it. I mean, you can get a gun. And even if we stop manufacturing guns, they import them. They will find a way to get a gun. And if you're a real nutcake, you will go out of your way to do this stuff. So most likely that would not have prevented it. Now, this article that I'm going to read by Larry Pratt, very interesting. It says, if we were to do away with the instant background check, the question is frequently asked, how would we keep guns out of the wrong hands? The answer is, and I'm quoting, by the way, we would be just as successful without the check as with it. How do we know? The Centers for Disease Control, an anti-gun federal agency, now this is the government talking, right, has examined several studies that focused on guns and crime. Their conclusion? They found that there is no impact from gun control laws, including the Brady Law, on crime. More drastic evidence comes from the laboratory of England. This island nation has banned handguns. They don't need a background check because there are no legitimate sales. Following the confiscation of over 1.5 million guns, including all legally owned handguns in 1997, violent crime has skyrocketed. Illegal handguns are estimated by the police to number over 3 million. According to a UN study in 2000, England is the most violent of all the world's industrial countries. You cannot legislate behavior. I heard this morning on a talk show program, and I don't recall which one it was. It was two gentlemen, very sharp guys. And one guy says, well, the way he interprets the Constitution is that the handguns were for a well-regulated militia and not for the individual. I mean, that's bunk. I mean, you can have a we actually gave guns out to people years ago just to make sure that they had firearms that did not belong to militias, just for their own protection and to protect the state as well. And remember, the reason for a well-regulated militia and the reason for individuals to were allowed to possess firearms in our Constitution is not to protect ourselves from, here we go. I think we may have somebody here. This is Liberty Talk Radio. This is Joe Cristiano. What is your first name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Joe. I'm Sandy from Allentown, Pennsylvania. How are you doing?
Allentown, Pennsylvania. Okay, Danny. Danny, could you speak up a little bit? You sound a little muffled, please.
Sorry about that. I'm on Skype. Can you hear me better now?
Oh, yes. Much better. Thank you very much. And what's your question, Danny?
I was just listening to this conversation about gun control, and I couldn't agree more. I'm a little frustrated with hearing everybody's knee-jerk reaction that everybody wants gun control as soon as one of these things happen. It's refreshing to hear somebody have a different opinion.
Well, thank you. I find it very frustrating also. I suspect, Danny, the reason why we pick on gun control, because that's easy. That's something that I don't have to do anything about as a citizen. I can just relegate this to our legislature and say, do something, they enact something, and then I feel safe, and I don't have to do anything. I don't have to be responsible. No one has to be responsible because the government is doing it for us. And, of course, you know where that ends up.
Yeah, we saw how well that worked this past week, and numerous times. This is basically seems to be a once a month occurrence now. You know, somebody gets a weapon and goes berserk and takes a bunch of lives unnecessarily, and all we hear about is more gun control.
Yeah, and when you think of it statistically, if you think of the number of people, over 300 million people in the United States, if you think of the number of guns, which is about equal to our population, if not more, no one knows really the number of guns that are outstanding because they don't dissolve. You know, people don't typically throw them away because they get rusty, but they keep them. And so the numbers grow every year. And, of course, we always have an influx of guns from overseas, especially from collectors and whatever. But if you look at the number of guns statistically and the number of crimes that are committed that are we would consider heinous crimes that, you know, should have been avoided, it's insignificant. It's absolutely. What if we did that with cars? How many people get killed by cars every year? What about drunk drivers? I mean, these are the real problems. I mean, we have people who are drunk drivers. They go to court. They go to court drunk. You know, they're convicted. And what do? They put them in a school for 2 weeks, and they're back driving again. You know, and bingo, they're repeat offenders. Well, we have a lot of problems, and guns are not it. And in fact, guns have a cleaning out effect because the people who usually use the guns a lot are gang members. That's where most of the homicides take place, and they sort of kill each other. So, you know, we don't. It lightens the load of the police department. I know that's cynical and all that stuff, but that's where most of the crimes are.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
These guys are always shooting it out, and it's that's a good point you made there about the cars. I have this debate with people all the time.
Yeah. May I ask, are you a gun owner?
Absolutely.
Okay, very good. Well, do you have any other questions for us? Do you have any other comments? We have an open mic tonight, so feel free.
I was actually curious more. I mean, I heard this topic and I was kind of interested, but I was curious to hear about some of your opinions on things that are going on in the world of economics and, you know, what your opinions on our trade deficits and some of those things might be.
Okay, all righty. You want to take it off the air then? Okay, I'll let you be, and I'll do that right now.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Danny. Appreciate it. All right, Danny asked a question about the economic issues. I have my own opinion. I follow the stock market. I know something about it. I'm not, you know, the quintessential expert, but I have enough money invested that I have to know something about it. You'll hear people say, we're due for a correction. The reason why I bring that up is not to give you an education on stock market lingo, but the reason why I've discovered through all these years, I'm 64 years old now, by the way, so I mean I've been around for quite a while and been investing for quite a while, is the reason why we say, oh, we're due for a correction, is that's another way, an intelligent way of saying, I have no idea what's going on, I don't know what's going to happen. Things are going up now, and eventually they're going to come down. But if we say them like that, if these pundits on the stock market say this stuff, they sound like they're unintelligent, you know, that they're misinformed or uninformed. So they say, well, you know, with such and such, such and such, and then, you know, we'll do for a correction. Well, they never tell you when. And then when we have that, we had the correction. They say, well, we had a correction. You know, my point being is that nobody knows. But I'll tell you my opinion. I think the whole world is in crisis. I think there's only one nation in the world, and I forgot which one it was, that has a that's on a gold standard. And, oh, hold on a second. We have here a message. I just want to see what it is first. Okay. Oh, it's Andy from My Two Cents. Okay. All right. Andy, thank you very much. Okay. I thought it was Danny that was calling. It was Andy that was calling, and that was Andy, all right, from mytwocents.com. Very good. I'm awfully sorry. Very good. I guess my ears aren't as good as they should be. Okay. All right, from an economic point of view, we just don't know. We have countries around the world all printing money as they need it. We all have fiat currencies. Our currency right now has a, on the world index, is like an 82, which is critical. Everything is very, very delicate. No one is abiding by the rules. I think people talk about the euro being stronger than the dollar. Well, on the surface, I think it is. But since all the euro countries, European countries, are sort of cheating a little bit, keeping two sets of books, that's going to fall apart, rip apart like crazy. I'm a pessimist when it comes to long-term economic continuity. I think there's going to be disruptions. And when there are disruptions, it's going to be hellacious and worldwide. I hear people say, put your money in Brazil. I have money in Brazil because I have some funds that also have Brazil, but I would never put money in Brazil. Why? Because Brazil and Argentina, their currencies are really sucky. Argentina's currency has gone down the tubes a couple of times, almost brought Brazil with it. I don't want to be in that country, you know? But we have a system right now which simply does not allow for any sort of logical standard for currency. In other words, the money you have today could be worthless tomorrow at the strike of a pen. Now, that doesn't make me feel very comfortable. And we talk about the full faith and credit of the U.S. government. Please. I mean, that is, we know where that is. We have a bankrupt country. I mean, if you take the unfunded debt, I hear it's somewhere, I've heard numbers like $59 trillion to $73 trillion that we're in debt. An amount that you can never pay back in a million years. There was an interesting article, and let me get that for you. In fact, I was going to save this for next week. Here is it. Here it is. It says, in 1990s, $2.8 trillion of new debt was created, more than created in the nation's entire history prior to 1990. $2.8 trillion of debt. Well, do you know what we have today? We have almost $9 trillion in debt. An additional $2.3 trillion in debt was added in the years of 2002 to 2006. And then the federal government debt, as of this writing, was $8.5 trillion. That's $28,423 per person and rising. When we have, we say, well, you know, we're a strong country because we are, we're still an industrial giant. My opinion is that we're an industrial giant because we're always at war. Now, in my industrial health testing business, has done very well in the past few years. In fact, we've done very well since we've been in Iraq, only because countries, our companies that we deal with, are making lots of parts. And they're making lots of parts because other suppliers that were making parts for the civilian community are now making it for the military. So that sort of backflushes and everyone stays busy. I suspect that if we pulled out of Iraq today and pulled out troops out of all these other places that, you know, we shouldn't be at, our economy would collapse in a month. Isn't that a shame? We're a continual wartime economy. But that also puts us in debt. And who buys the debt? Well, foreign countries. They buy it because we're relatively stable compared to their currency, and they get some interest and all that, and they're losing interest in our interest. So we're going to have to jack up the interest to keep them going. In fact, I read recently that over $10 billion of treasuries was cashed in recently, and that's a first, all-time first in a short period of time. And we all know that China holds, $750 billion in our debt? And, you know, China doesn't have to invade us. All they do is call in the debt. They'd collapse us in a New York minute. So I guess economically, I'm not too excited about what is going on. Now, I'm doing well in the stock market because as the Dow Jones keeps on going up and I'm doing well, I'm riding the wave. And I stay in equities only because I don't trust the dollar. I'd rather be in equities than the dollar. Unlike the crash of 29, or the, I should say, the crash didn't cause the depression of 29, it was our government that did it, but the depression of 19 in the 1930s, the dollar was king because there were certificates of gold and silver. There were certificates of gold and silver. You can go to the Treasury and get gold and silver for the paper that you had in your hand. Today, if you went to the Treasury and said, hey, give me something for this Federal Reserve note, they'd ask you to leave. No, they'd escort you out, maybe even put you in a detention camp for a while for being a wise guy. In other words, our dollars are worthless today. They're only worth something because people are accepting them. Now, people say, well, you know, people keep on investing. These foreign countries keep on investing in the United States. Yeah, you can't do that forever. Eventually, we will own nothing, and the foreigners will own everything. I mean, we have a long way to go. That's not going to happen tomorrow. But you cannot keep on doing that. And if investors don't feel real comfortable with their investment, they'll dump them. And when they dump their investment, so goes our economy. It's a lousy situation that we find ourselves in. And the thing is, it's not an independent situation. Not only are the people carrying around funds that are dependent on debt of the federal government, which is a hell of a way to carry money around, but our own country is dependent on debt and war. Now, I can't get too excited about that. Now, what would my solution be? Well, I guess I would try to return to some sort of standard. I would like to see our coins once again made out of 90% silver. Boy, when I say that, you know, today people are buying, you know, old coins, they call them junk coins, and they're paying a lot of money for them, several times their face value. Why? Because silver has value, and our coins don't. Sometimes when I just take one of the new coins, the state quarters, and I look at the way that they are minted, and I'll find an old quarter, and one that does not even a silver quarter, but one that was minted before that, the old coin had deep relief. It was a beautiful coin. And now our coins are looking like European coins. They're just stamped very, very lightly. Quite frankly, they're ugly. They're just ugly coins. And I object to the fact that the United States now is minting gold dollar coins. Because they're not gold. I mean, they're gold in color. And then as soon as you carry them around for a couple of days, they turn brownish. And they're ugly coins. I got one from the bank the first day it was out. Just happened to be at the bank. And then I said, what's the news here? Well, we got new coins in. I looked at it. It was George Washington. It was a dollar. You know, it looked a little bit bigger than a quarter. And I bought one. And as soon as I came home, I put it in an envelope so it wouldn't tarnish or anything like that, because I know it's going to turn a funny color and get ugly and I'll want to throw it away. But it has no intrinsic value. Well, I don't know where we're going, Andy, as far as our economy is concerned. I know we're going in the wrong direction. I know we can't rely on a economy which is based on wartime footing. Because then you have to be at war 24 hours a day, 365 days out of the year. And that drains any country. Well, and it has drained every empire like the United States. I'm not certain. Well, let me put it this way. People say, well, we should let our voices be heard in Washington. My response, that's a fool's game. The people in Washington know better than us what is going on and what needs to be done. The reason why they don't do that is because the people who are pulling the strings in Washington are not patriots. They're not really Americans. They're globalists. Now, I have no problem with globalization at all. None at all. I'm talking about people themselves. And they follow the money. And if following the money means destroying the United States to their advantage, the United States goes. The same reason why we send our boys and gals over to Iraq, they die, no problem. 10,000 die, doesn't bother them. Because that's where the money is. That's where they're making the money. Provided they're making the money, we're going to stay in Iraq. That's a very cynical way of looking at things, but unfortunately very realistic. We're not in Iraq for any reason other than people are securing money and power by staying in there. Now, if it's at the total expense of the United States, so be it. They don't care. They have no national boundaries, no nationalism, no nothing. They are only concerned with money and power. And money and power transcends every single national border in the world. It makes no difference whatsoever. Sometimes they blow it, sometimes they don't. But on average, they make out pretty well at our expense. And so far, being in Iraq, over 3,000 boys killed, tens of thousands injured one way, shape, or form that have come back and lead a horrible life. But you think it bothers them? No problem. They could be 10 times that amount. Doesn't bother them in the least. Because their concern, their objective is power and money. And I'm not going to go into who I think these people are and everything. But of course, Cheney is part of that group. George Bush is simply a pawn. He's told what to do. He doesn't make a move unless the true power behind the White House tells him what should be done. And so when we talk about the economy is based on a wartime footing, on fiat currency, on debt. How can I feel good about that? I just can't do that. Now, it could be that I'm just a nut and everything is fine and I'm just a negative person. I don't think so. No, in fact, if I am, please call in 646-652-4620 and tell me. Because I'd love to hear some encouraging news. Because most of the stuff I read isn't very encouraging. I'll bet by the end of this year we see the price of gold go up substantially. And if there's ever a rush on gold, there's going to be some hell of a problem. And it's not going to be only in the United States, it's going to be worldwide. Because people are going to start getting antsy about money. And they're going to start realizing that the money that they have, or the currency that they think that they have in their wallet, is worthless. Always has been. Anyway, that's my take on the economy. Again, I'm heavily invested in the stock market, so I'm not selling short or anything like that. I think the place to have your money is in the market, so that you can adjust for inflation. And you must be in commodities. If you're not in commodities, you're leaving yourself wide open. When I say commodities, everything from copper, palladium, nickel, gold, silver, you name it, you should be in commodities. Stuff that is traded and needed worldwide. Because what you have to do is you have to substitute the U.S. dollar for something that represents the dollar of 1930. In the 1930s, the dollar was king. In our next financial crisis, the dollar will be worthless. That's it. Okay. All righty. Now, let me talk about next week. Our next program, obviously our speaker, our guest, never showed, and I'm really upset about that. I'll find out more about that later, and I'll let you know. Our next program will be Thursday, excuse me, April 26th at 6:30 a.m. I'm not certain what the subject is going to be. I may do some research on some of the work that the Working Families Project does, and we may talk about that. If you would send me your email to comments@libertytalkradio.com, and why don't you make some suggestions? Send me your email, send me your comments, send me your questions, and from there we can have a program. It's difficult for me to... I hate to conjure up, you know, a subject to talk about. I don't mind doing that, but I like to know what's on your mind, and it's a lot easier if I hear from you, and then I can do some research if I'm unfamiliar with the subject, and then come back to you. And that's the way it should work on talk radio. It's a two-way street. Okay? Well, we're going to cut this short by 10 minutes. We still have about 8 minutes left on the air. We're going to cut this short. The first thing I'm going to do is play our bumper song. There we go. That's song is "And I Wonder," and we should all wonder how things work around here anymore. Okay. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranchakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Again, that's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Or phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Until next time, stay well. Stay tuned. Thank you. Good night.